From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 16th day of July 2019. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. Out of New Market, Indiana, we'll get an update of crop progress from the state statisticians in Iowa, Illinois, and Minnesota. We'll hear all about wort and flavor profiles with the Vice President of Supply at Anheuser-Busch, and I'll talk too with Don Day at Day Weather about the forecast right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here are the numbers as they finished up in Chicago. September corn today down 5 3/4 at 435 1/4. December at 5 3/4 lower at 441 1/4. And the March at 448 1/2, 5 1/4 lower. August soybeans down 14 cents at $8.87 3/4. November off 14 at 906. And January 13 1/2 lower at 918 3/4. Bean oil down 29 cents. The bean meal down 3.20. Wheat futures for the day, September 1/4 lower at 507 1/2 for the soft red. The hard red down 2 3/4 at 446 1/4. Both of those are the September contracts. Live cattle futures, 27 1/2 cents lower in the lead option. The feeders down 60 cents. And lean hogs for the day, a buck and a nickel lower at $79.05. We're now joined by Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, to take a look at this marketplace and talk about what happened. Hey, thanks for being with us, Wayne. Yes, it is a continuation Tuesday on the way down. I'm sorry, I didn't have you potted up there to begin with. So a continuation Tuesday, but there were a couple of things I think that were probably important to look at. There was a little rain and there was a tweet in the middle of the day, too.
Oh, yes. Donald J. did say that things aren't going well with China, and he could go back to wanting to institute more tariffs. And that is just not the language that we wanted to hear, because we were hoping that it'd be closer to we're going to be taking off tariffs and we're going to get some agreements done and some grain bought. So that didn't help anything at all. The weather forecast has changed, was a little friendlier. The GFS was a little wetter in the noon forecast. We had a sidewalk wetter here about 20 minutes ago. It seemed like that's about all we're going to get out of it, but we could surely use a half to an inch of rain around here. Some areas got as much as 4 inches down in the Mid-South, so overnight, and they're diluted with rain again.
So the corn market was down lower earlier in the day and then dropped as that tweet came out, though it showed a little strength at the end of the day. I guess that's better than nothing.
Yeah, I think it sort of punched around and come back and tried to get close to that 40-day moving average, or 20-day moving average on the corn in that way. And so we did see a little strength there. You know, there is a lot of problems out here in these cornfields and the timing like that. So, and I think they're waiting to see if the European model verified what the American model said at the noontime too. So, but we're way behind on silking, their pollination. You know, it's probably good it wasn't pollinating this week or into this week with most of the corn with the temperatures that we're looking at, and maybe a little cooler next week. Export sales have been really lacking. We haven't had any daily announcements here this week. That's been hard on things, too. And, you know, you didn't think just up 1% in the corn ratings, but we were all yelling how bad the weather was and how hot it was. And not being down the 1% gave the algorithmic type funds a reason to sell last night.
I guess it all did. Anything else before I let you go?
Like that. So, well, you know, we're looking ahead to hopefully we can get that little cooler weather for next week. And maybe we can get some of this corn ready to pollinate soon.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Todd.
That is Wayne Nelson with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Market Report for this Tuesday afternoon. Let's take a look now at yesterday's USDA Weekly Crop Progress Report. It shows around the nation 17% of the corn crop is silking. The rolling five-year average is 42%. 48% of the crop is in good condition, 10% in excellent. That's changed from last week. Up one percentage point, 47 and 10 last week. Last year, by the way, that number was 51 and 21 respectively. 95% of the soybeans have emerged, 99%. Is the rolling five-year average, and just 22% of that crop has bloomed. The five-year average is 49%. The condition of the crop is 46% good and 8% excellent. That's down a percentage point from last year and well below the 53% and 16% from the previous year. Now, here are the state statisticians from Illinois, Iowa, and Minnesota with updates from their regions.
This is Brad Medlock, agricultural statistician for the USDA National Agricultural Statistics Service. It was a dry week in Iowa that allowed farmers 6.0 days suitable for field work during the weekend in July 14, 2019. The recent dry weather helped farmers catch up on field work activities. However, there were many comments that areas in Iowa now need rain to help crops continue to move along. Topsoil moisture condition was rated 1% very short, 14% short, 78% adequate, and 7% surplus. Districts in the southern third of Iowa reported topsoil moisture conditions with over 25% short to very short. This is the first time this season any district in Iowa reported topsoil moisture condition at 25% or higher short to very short. 8% of the corn crop has begun to silk, 13 days behind last year and 10 days behind the 5-year average. Corn condition rated 62% good to excellent. Nearly all of the expected soybean crop has emerged at 98% statewide. 26% of the crop has started to bloom, 12 days behind last year and 9 days behind average. Soybean condition rated 63% good to excellent. Nearly all of the first cutting of alfalfa hay has been cut at 98% complete. The second cutting of alfalfa hay reached 33%, 11 days behind last year and 9 days behind average. Pasture condition declined to 65% good to excellent. Livestock experienced some stress due to heat. For the USDA NAS Upper Midwest Regional Field Office, this is Brad Medlock.
This is Mark Schleusener, state statistician for Illinois with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. Temperatures moderated to near normal levels last week, and rainfall was scattered and light. Overall, the state average temperature was 77.4 degrees last week, nearly 1 degree above normal. The average rainfall across Illinois was only 15 one-hundredths of an inch, compared to the normal level of 80 one-hundredths of an inch for this week. Accumulated growing degree days are now slightly above normal for the state, but southern parts of Illinois are a little ahead of normal and northern areas are a little behind. There was an average of 6.3 days suitable for field work around Illinois last week. Field work activities included harvesting wheat, cutting and baling hay, and spraying crops. Topsoil moisture levels declined and are now rated 1% very short, 18 short, 72 adequate, and 9% surplus. Corn silking has now reached 19% of acres. That compares to 91% 1 year ago and 67% for the 5-year average. The condition of the Illinois corn crop was rated as 18% very poor to poor, 40% fair, and 42% good to excellent, a little better than 1 week ago. Soybean planting advanced 3 points to 96% finished, compared to 99% for the 5-year average. 91% of soybean acres have emerged, compared to 99% normally, and 12% of soybean acres are blooming, compared to 54% normally. The condition of Illinois soybeans was rated as 22% of acres in very poor to poor condition, 37% fair, and 41% in good to excellent condition, which is a little better than 1 week ago. Turning now to winter wheat, 90% of acres have been harvested, compared to 96% 1 year ago and 93% normally. The second cutting of alfalfa hay is 39% finished, compared to 69% normally. The third cutting of alfalfa hay has just begun, and other hay harvest is 95% finished, compared to 97% normally. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Heartland Region, Illinois Field Office of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Dan Loftus, state statistician for the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office. The northwest corner of Minnesota dealt with above average precipitation, while other districts received some much needed warmer temperatures. There were 4.3 days suitable for field work during the week. Topsoil moisture conditions were rated 0% very short, 3% short, 68% adequate, and 29% surplus. Silked corn at 2% was 10 days behind the 5-year average. Corn condition was rated at 58% good to excellent, a slight decrease from the previous week. Soybeans blooming reached 16% this week, that's 11 days behind average. Soybean condition rated 60% good to excellent. 96% of the spring wheat crop had headed, now 6 days ahead of average. Spring wheat turning color progressed to 20% this week, that's 5 days behind normal. Spring wheat condition rated 85% good to excellent. The first cutting of alfalfa hay was 98% complete, only one day behind the five-year average. The second cutting of alfalfa hay reached 42% this week. That's 6 days behind normal. For the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
Thanks go to the state statisticians for their weekly updates of crop progress across the Midwest. Well, last week, you know, I traveled to Fargo-Moorhead for the Anheuser-Busch Grower Days event, and one of the things that they did for us while we were there was to take us through the malt house. Now, the malting process for barley is essentially sprouting it and then turning around and drying that out, and then they ship it on rail cars to Anheuser-Busch in St. Louis and Jacksonville, Florida, and all the other brewing houses that they have across the United States. However, that malt is tasted in the form of wort. It looks like a beer, frankly, but this liquid isn't a beer, and it has a profile that needs to meet some specs. They're subjective for Anheuser-Busch to brew beers from. It's a flavor profile, and that profile needs to be matched at all of the places that malt barley for Anheuser-Busch. This is food science, the kinds of things that are taught here on the University of Illinois campus in Fission. That's the Department of Food Science and Human Nutrition. I talked with the Vice President of Supply at Anheuser-Busch, David Taylor, about these flavor profiles and what they mean to beer.
So if we step back for a minute and just think about beer as its fundamental ingredients. So when you look at a malt's going to bring in lots of different characteristics. It's going to bring in, first and foremost, all your starches, and the enzymes that make those starches into the sugars you're going to use for fermentation. But it's also going to bring a lot of flavor components. So it matters what barley you start with, but then you can do a lot with how it gets malted. So when we talk about a pale malt, that's a pale malt where we're trying to bring in a lot of starch and sugar, a lot of extract. And we're not over-drying the malt to bring in other characters like toffee or coffee or any of the specialty malts. So a lot of different beer styles will use a pale malt for a big percentage of their malt bill, and then they bring in other specialty malts to add in flavor or color or foam stability, different other aspects you can get from the malt. So in this malt plant here in Moorhead, we're producing our pale malt. The base malt you're going to see that we use to brew Budweiser, Bud Light, you know, our American lager-style beers.
So this is malt that comes from barley, of course, in this part of the world. And American barley is used in all the Budweiser products.
Yeah, Budweiser's 100%, 100% American barley. As an overall company, we use about 98% American barley to produce our malts. And then there are a few malts that come out of Europe or Canada. They're very specialty malts.
Let's talk about this wort and the flavor profile that you're looking for. Give me a description of what that might be.
Yeah, so if we look at the brewing process, and you go through and you taste the brewing process in every step of the way, we'll talk about wort. Wort comes when we bring all of our malted barley, we grind it in a malt mill, we bring it into a cooker, combine it with water, and we hold it at different temperatures to produce fermentable and unfermentable sugars. Then we extract the liquid off of that. We leave behind the remaining grain particles, which is protein and fiber, and items that go out for cattle feed. But that liquid we pull off, It's full, it's sweet, it's very malty. It is the beginning of what will become beer. As it comes into a brew kettle, it'll get hops added to it, and you'll start to get the other components of bitterness. But that first step there, when you're just looking at cold wort, all that is the malt itself ground and converted with water to give us a nice base to begin with. So it truly represents the flavors you're getting from only the malts. So when it's here at the malt plant, we're making a simulation of what I would see in the brewery when I created my mash and drew off my wort. And so I can use that to taste and understand what flavor components the malt is going to bring. Now, a lot of times we're looking to make sure there aren't any undesirable flavor components. So you don't want any green, any grassy. You don't want any astringency, any bitter. So a lot of it is checking to make sure there's anything we don't want. But obviously what you're expecting there is a really nice, clean, sweet, full, malty, a lot of cereal, you know, a little bit of doughy or biscuit. You get a lot of that off of a wort from just a malt wort like we have here. When we're in the brewery and we're converting the wort at different points to drive either fermentable or unfermentable sugars, then you might see a little more variation with color or what the wort tastes like based on which brew we're going to produce with that product.
So you have malt plants here in Moorhead. There are a couple in Idaho Falls, and you do purchase malt from other places from time to time. Each of them are going to be doing this wort tasting, which is very subjective. There's a lot of science that goes into the production, but the tasting is subjective. How do you make sure once it gets to the brewery in St. Louis or in Jacksonville, Florida, or wherever it happens to be going, that it meets the specs for Anheuser-Busch?
Well, there's a lot of physical specs. There's specs on size, there's specs on extract, there's specs on enzymatic power. You've got a lot of physical measurements that can be taken, but in malting and in brewing, it's a nice combination of the science and the art of brewing. So we can take a ton of measurements in every step of the brewing process, and we use those to drive consistency, but ultimately there's no replacement for sensory, no replacement for taste, no replacement for aroma. And so we take all of our malts from all of our suppliers, and we produce worts from those. We taste every one, every piece before it gets shipped out of each plant. We also taste them against each other to make sure there's consistency. And then, as we move through the brewing process, you see the same thing happen in the breweries. And then for the final product, I'll taste Budweisers from all over the country weekly, different brands each week, making sure we're having consistency out of each brewery. Beginning in the beginning with worts coming out of the malt house, ending in the end with me tasting finished product to make sure I'm driving consistency between all the breweries. But it's really about the combination of what's the profile of what we're tasting, in this case would be a malt wort, and are there any defects or anything out of place. Anytime you produce a beer, there's lots of different ways to make beers different. The simplest way is with different ingredients. So when we go through and we design a brand, the amount of malt we're going to use, different varieties of malt we're going to use, which often is a blend. You know, you'll see two or three different types of cereal grains, sometimes rye, sometimes oats, sometimes an adjunct. And what we call an adjunct is a starch source that is not malted barley. And so rice, obviously, is the big ingredient in Budweiser. Rice is a great source of starch because it's very clean and crisp. You know, so I can bring rice in and I get all that character from the rice, but I don't get any more malt character. So when you drink a Budweiser, a percentage of the available alcohol and body of that beer is coming from the rice, and it's going to have a different flavor than if that were all malt. And in Budweiser's case, that's what gives us the crisp, clean finish. So there are lots of different products out there that, you know, wheat beers obviously use wheat as an adjunct. That's very similar to brewing with, say, rice or with corn, but you have to have malt because malt brings with it the enzymes that'll break the starches down into fermentable sugars. And how we treat those cereals as they come through our brew house can control whether we're creating fermentable sugars or non-fermentable sugars. So I begin with what ingredients do I want to use, and then I move into how do I want to treat them in the brew house, what yeast do I want to use, how do I want to ferment them, what hop varieties am I going to add, and pretty soon you get the thousands of beer varieties and flavor profiles you can achieve with what starts off as a fairly simple set of ingredients, but their combination and how they're treated really open up worlds of possibilities.
And if I were to want to drink something that was malty and sweet, what would I choose from your varieties?
Oh, boy, there's a ton of great beers that are malty and sweet. Right now today, obviously, I'd recommend the First Harvest. That's an all-malt beer, and it was brewed to showcase malted barley. And so that's a fantastic choice. Also, if you're in an area that doesn't have a harvest reserves, it's not going to be nationally. A lot of the Bud Reserve series, like the Discovery, has a nice full character. When you're looking, the malts and hops have a balance. And so I can take a beer with very little malt and a lot of hops, and it'll taste very bitter. And I can take another beer that has more hops but has more malt, and they will balance each other, and it will seem less bitter. So when you're looking for something very malty, a lot of times you're looking for a style where your bitterness is going to be a little lower, the body's going to be a little fuller, you're going to get a darker, more robust beer like you would in like an amber, a stout, you know, different beer styles. Again, if we're looking for a very malty beer, some great choices. I mean, Michelob Amber Bock, Bud Reserve Series, this new Harvest Lager. If you're looking for a very sweet beer, there are a couple different options out there. You can look for a beer that is intentionally, you know, designed to be a little less hoppy, a little less bitter, and a little sweeter. Something like a Shock Top, obviously, is very sweet. some brands that are brewed with corn instead of rice, like Busch. Busch is going to come across to some as a little sweeter than, say, a Budweiser or a Bud Light, because there's a little more body in a Busch, and it's brewed with corn instead of rice. So the difference there is, instead of having that crisp, clean snap, you're going to get a little more body, a little softer, a little more sweetness. And so, again, the grain bill makes a huge difference. And then how you balance that with the hops you add is what brings you to the perception of how the sweet balances against the rest of the profile of the beer.
Hey, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much. And you're welcome to come by any time to the brewery. We'd love to show you around.
I will do that.
You can bet that I'll be taking David Taylor, who's the Vice President of Supply at Anheuser-Busch, up on that offer to come visit the brewery there in St. Louis, Missouri. And if you didn't catch that at the very end, and you want to drink a beer that's made with corn, and probably corn either from Illinois or Iowa, make sure you pick up a Busch or a Busch Light, and Amberbach as well. Let's turn our attention now to the weather forecast. We're joined by Don Day. He's a day weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. I want to start in the deep south. Barry came on land, but boy, it sure seemed like it fizzled pretty quickly. What can you tell me about its path and what it dropped?
Well, it certainly did fizzle in terms of what it was expected to do. It really did not live up to expectations. This was a really good example of why we all have to be cautious, meteorologists included, about how much stock and faith we put into computer modeling. Now, all of the computer models overforecasted the rainfall as much as 5-6 times than what actually fell. Now, we're still going to be somewhat concerned with some heavy rainfall across portions of the eastern Corn Belt up into Pennsylvania, eastern Ohio, and New York State here over the next 24 to 48 hours as the remnants head that way. But certainly, it was not a storm system that lived up to its potential, but we're still going to see some rains for it over the next 24 to 48 hours before we go back into a pattern where we aren't going to have any tropical activity for a while.
Okay, so given that, will the heat live up to the hype that we've heard about it?
Well, I think it will, but as we have mentioned in this program earlier this season, we're going to have hot periods this summer, but they're not going to be persistent. And this is a good example. Over the next 5 to 7 days, we will see some heat out of the desert states move northeastward all the way into the upper plain states, into portions of the western Corn Belt, to be followed by some cooler weather by the middle portions of next week. And I think this is how we're going to see the heat be this summer. We're going to have it for a while, but it's not going to stay.
So tell me about where it will be and how hot.
Well, first of all, expect the plain states and the east slopes of the Rockies to see temperatures get into the 90s. There's going to be some 100s in Texas, eastern New Mexico, Kansas, portions of Colorado, even Nebraska could have some areas approaching the upper 90s to near 100 degrees. And those warmer temperatures, lots of 80s, lots of middle to upper 90s headed into the western and central areas of the Corn Belt and the northern plains between now through the weekend and probably into Monday of next week. But after that, all of those areas will start to see some cooler temperatures.
Will we see any rain in this forecast?
We will. We're going to see a smattering of shower and thunderstorm activity, nothing that looks to be terribly excessive, but there will be some drier weather with some of this heat here in the short term.
All right. Hey, thanks so much, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Thanks for being along with us this afternoon. Remember, you can always listen to us on demand anytime that you would like. The address is WILL.AG.org. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.